This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Continue to see those ratings come in. Much appreciated. Certainly helps out the podcast. Good Thursday for all of us. And Matt Eubanks, I will get to his lone loss here in just a moment. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined today by a special guest, Jonathan Von Tobel, my partner in crime on the VSiN Primetime, as well as our NBA insider. Let's get to this, JVT. I'm going to give you your kudos because you hit a 30-1 future on Monday as Paul Skeens wins National League Rookie of the Year. But sometimes the wins or the pain of the losses outweigh the glory of the wins. You, Matt Eubanks, Wes Reynolds, I tailed the three of you, all were on San Jose State on Saturday night. And if anyone has not seen how that game unfolded, Scott Van Pelt did his thing on Monday night on Bad Beats. How painful was that San Jose State L on Saturday night?
I mean, it was pretty brutal. And what added to it was, on Live Bet Saturday, I was on with Will Hill and kind of went through the whole thing. And he was talking about, you know, what's pretty good is, like, I think they're going to be pretty live, it sounds like, to play on Moneyline. It's like, you know what? That's a good idea, Will. And then sure enough, watching that, the way that thing melted down to not even get the cover in that game, the way it went was absolutely brutal. But I mean, you kind of felt it coming, I thought, when they turned it over on downs late in the third quarter. Right. I think that was one where I was like, oh, boy, like it's 21-21. We still got 4 minutes left here or thereabouts in the third quarter. Boise's probably going to go right downfield here and score. And sure enough, they did. Then San Jose State follows it up with that lost fumble. You kind of knew it was coming from there. And I just didn't want to accept it. And then when that interception is returned for a touchdown, it's like, all right, well, I'm kind of done with football at this point right now.
Well, I turned it off after the pick six. I had the multi-screen set up and I'm watching all the games. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to focus on Oregon, Wisconsin, and then BYU. My biggest bet of the week was Kansas. So I was like, I got to be full in on Kansas BYU as soon as this game starts. So I turned it off after the pick six. I didn't even know they got to the 1 yard line. I saw the result. And then they got to the 1 yard line and had four plays from the one. Don't get it home. So that certainly was excruciating. You mentioned it, and I've been keeping tabs on this, JVT, which is we continue to see a double-digit dog win each and every week. And we saw it. We saw almost a couple others, but Louisiana Tech was a 11.5-point dog. They go to Western Kentucky. They win outright. We were talking about it on Wednesday's show with Wes. New Mexico, the team that you adore, they go and knock off Washington State. And that's another one of those things where it's like, you know, the bear, Chris Felico, always says, the less you bet, the more you lose when you win. I didn't even bet the damn game. And I talked about it all week. And I'm like, shit, I should have taken New Mexico at least the points. So we continue to see the double digit dogs come home. New Mexico gets the win. We will talk about New Mexico coming up shortly, as they will take on Hawaii in 2 weeks regarding a win total of mine. But every week, JVT, you wrote a column on VSiN, just kind of looking at how lines have adjusted week to week. And let's run through a couple of them that jump out to you, starting with Iowa and Maryland. So this is one of the games that you wrote up. What jumped out to you regarding Iowa and Maryland?
Yeah, so I thought there was a couple of things, but the big thing is the total move here. So we kind of know at this point that these are two of the better over teams in the Big Ten. Iowa's 8-2 to the over on the season. Maryland 7-3 to the over. And both have been going over by a healthy margin per contest. I mean, for Iowa, their games are going over on average by 7.8 points per game. And for Maryland, just about 5.5 points per game. So I think when you look at it on its surface, it's not surprising that you initially saw some move to the over, but it's where it opened up to where it got. 42.5 was the opener. And if you look at the article at VSiN.com, you'll see the numbers on the games. Those are always the Circa openers. So you open 42.5 at Circa, gets bet all the way up to 46 by the end of the day, and actually, excuse me, 47 by the end of the day. And eventually it's come off of that. We're down to 46, but that to me was pretty surprising. And I always think it's such a good point. you know, for any of the audience that listens or doesn't really start betting or looking at some of these games till a bit later in the week, that is really a true indication of those that shape the market of what their opinions are. 42.5 is a low bar to clear. You got a whole bunch of guys and gals that are sitting on over 42.5 in this game. But if you're going to come in and go, Iowa's 8 to the over, I'm going to bet this thing over 46, you're missing out on about, 3.5 points of value there when you're talking about betting that game over from where it initially opened. But that was the reason why this game came up. I don't think it's surprising. You see pros all the time just grab key numbers, so it came off of that 7 pretty quickly on Sunday. But the fact that they deemed that this total was 4.5 points off market and the ceiling was 47 after an opener of 42.5 was pretty surprising.
Yeah, and I'll jump right into it because I've got some decisions to make. You know, all summer we scour the markets, JVT. We look for best bets from win totals, from futures, whatever it may be. And it's funny how it all plays out. So I've got 3 win totals that are very much in question moving forward, and I got to figure out what to do. Iowa's one of them. I'm over 7.5. Was fortunate enough to get that number early on in the summer, but they're 6-4. Brendan Sullivan, as reported, is done for the year. So you're down your top 2 quarterbacks, Cade McNamara out and Brendan Sullivan out. And now you go on the road to Maryland. Granted, you're off a bye. You're around a 6.5 point favorite. And then if you win that game, you host Nebraska on Black Friday, a primetime game on NBC. Nebraska plays Wisconsin this week. Nebraska, by the way, has lost 8 straight games. I saw this note from Brent McMurphy when trying to get the bowl eligibility the last handful of years. So it kind of starts the discussion, JVT, and you and I have talked about this so much, and you know, going back to the Paul Skeens ticket that you had, do you hedge, do you not hedge? I don't know if it's a hedge. Do you try to middle it? So that's what I'm trying to figure out, JVT, is do I take Maryland plus the points, trying to hope for an Iowa to, you know, win 1 to 6 points? We win both bets, or we keep the win total alive, and then we win the Maryland bet. So it's kind of an interesting situation. I'm curious your thoughts on, you know, what to do. We'll start with Iowa. I've got 2 others to talk about, but Iowa laying 6.5. Do I look at Maryland plus the points here to try to thread that needle, head into that Nebraska game with a winner on Maryland plus the points and still have the Iowa win total alive?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally we've talked about this before. I think if it's like life-changing money or anything like that, like I'd be willing to have a conversation about what to do with it, considering it's, you know, a win total, and I don't want to call it a run-of-the-mill wager, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
win totals
generally, it's not a huge, you know, 30-to-1 ticket like, you know, you hit or whatever it was.
So I think that I'm generally going to let that thing ride. I mean, because there's a situation, obviously, that you're alluding to where you take like 6.5, 7 with Maryland, they lose by 8, and then Iowa goes out and then like loses to Nebraska,
yeah,
right? And then like now all of a sudden you're sitting there with like nothing and you get completely screwed. So I would sit back and I would let it ride. I mean, you know, you look at Maryland, and I don't think that you're really quaking in your boots at this point. They go out there, they lose to Rutgers last week, 31-17. Offensively, like, they were fine. Actually, I gained Rutgers by quite a bit, 457 to 375, but they're not a particularly great team that's playing well right now. And, I mean, I guess they still have bowl eligibility in front of them, but their schedule, I mean, it's Maryland, it's Iowa and then Penn State, so they probably feel pretty bleak at this point right now. I think that you're going to catch them in a right point, be able to get that win. And then next week, we'll see. I mean, I used Nebraska. I bet them, if you remember, early in the week at +9 against USC.
Yep.
And they stayed inside of that number, but just barely. Ooh. And the Dana Holgorsen change in offense coordinator didn't really look particularly great. And Dylan Raiola continues to be underwhelming. Had a brilliant IQ play where he slides too early of the chains on a key drive in that game against USC. I thought he had a first down. But I think you're still in pretty good position for Iowa. Obviously, you're going to get there by the skin of your teeth. But I think you're probably I would sit back and let that thing come in because I think it comes in.
Yeah, we'll get to USC and UCLA. Interesting one. That's a late night game this week. But another game you mentioned in your column, Rutgers and Illinois, seen a lot of movement towards the over here. Circa opened 44.5. Right now, market's sitting 48 on this total. As for the spread, it's ping-ponged around that pick'em price. Right now, looks like Illinois a slight favorite on the road at Rutgers.
Yeah, so I thought this was interesting. So, like, we're watching, we've seen like kind of like a little bit of line movement against Illinois for 2 straight weeks. Not a ton, but at least it's worth like kind of jotting down. Like, does the market kind of want to go against this Illini squad? You know, I think we talked about it, but Michigan State was pretty popular play against Illinois last week, and in terms of just even, you know, winning the game outright for the for the Spartans, and they ultimately didn't get there. Now you hear you have Rutgers. And as I mentioned, right, Rutgers got out gained in that game against Maryland. I don't think looked particularly impressive, but you mentioned the most interesting part about this game is the move to the over. Total jumped 3.5 points on Sunday by the time you got to the afternoon. And it's interesting because this is an Illinois team that is 3-7 to the under this season. So it's not like they've been an over squad. Like we just talked about Iowa and Maryland. Those are two teams that are playing to overs at a pretty solid clip. This is not the case here with Illinois. But as I mentioned in the column, a note that is somewhat interesting when you dig into the way the totals have played out so far this season, all three of the games that have gone over the total for the Illinois, for the Illini have come in conference, and Illinois has averaged 39.6 points per game in those games. So is it just a matter of, again, being able to take on a middle-of-the-road Rutgers team, another middle-of-the-road conference squad with a wide receiver core that I think has been pretty impressive when you look at it from Illinois' standpoint, has shown out in a lot of these games, and that's something that this team is going to be able to contribute to getting a game over the total, I think is going to be interesting to watch. But generally, when I write these columns and you see these games like go over or under in a certain direction, there's some pretty strong trends in the season that point in that direction. This one isn't the case.
Yeah, another game that you pointed out, and you know, I've had a hard time reading these two teams. The Big 12 in general is kind of a very tricky conference, and we saw it play out on Saturday night as BYU undefeated. You and I both had Kansas, and I'll be honest, you know, we got there. It was a bit fortunate. We needed a pooch punt to go awry on BYU. BYU gets down inside the 10-yard line. I think a lot of us were thinking, here we go again, BYU magic, and they don't get it. But UCF and West Virginia. West Virginia at home last week, they lose to Baylor. Baylor's a team that really has been a bet-on team as of lately. Put up 512 yards of offense last week. We saw the return of Garrett Green for West Virginia, was able to run quite a bit in that loss against Baylor. But we saw the number open pick, and within milliseconds, it went up a field goal at Circa. So I imagine this is what jumped out to you regarding UCF and West Virginia.
Yeah, well, it's that, but it's also, look, the market's been wrong on UCF, right, Tim? We talked about this from the beginning of the year, where I wasn't as high and didn't really see what was going on with Central Florida. Thought they were a flawed defensive team that didn't have much to back up consistent play, that they were going to be able to win enough games. And, you know, I noted it in the column, UCF is 2-5 ATS in their last seven games. And the market, again, here, just leaping in that direction. I thought that was really telling, because sometimes those that shape the market are pretty stubborn. Like, we see it almost every single week. We'll invoke the NFL really quickly. The Jets are a great example of it. Right? The market has been staunchly on the Jets' side for too many weeks to count. Again, this last weekend, they took money against the Colts. They lose the game outright. And so when some of these sharp bettors who shape these numbers on Sundays, when they get that itch, like, sometimes they just refuse to let it go. And this seems to be another one of those instances. The question is, do you trust West Virginia? You mentioned that game against Baylor. That was on when I was on Live Bet Saturday. We were keeping track of it. That was like, what was it? Was it 42-35 or 42-28? Something ridiculous in the first half. Like, it was an insane game going up and down. They couldn't stop Baylor at all. The second half quieted down. But this is a West Virginia team that gave up 7.2 yards per play and 49 points overall in that loss to Baylor. Do you trust them to actually get a stop and actually stay inside of a low number like that? It was the fourth straight West Virginia game to go over the total, and it was the third loss and failed cover in five games. And so that's what ultimately, like, I think I understand the move this time for Central Florida, but it is worth noting that the market has been flat out wrong about this Knights team throughout the season.
All right, let's take a quick break with JVT. On the other side, I've got another game that he wrote up for the column that I think is very interesting. It leads into the old fired coach bump, and should we blindly follow that trend this week? So we'll take a quick break. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back with JBT at MeJBT, is where you can follow him on social media. Check out all of his columns up on VSiN NBA, college football early on in the week, and of course, catch him on VSiN Primetime. All right, Kennesaw State, we have now brought this team up probably too much on this podcast, I'll be honest. And, you know, Adam's not here today, but it is worth noting we had a friendly, not a wager, we were just curious which Owl program will have the most wins, Temple or Kennesaw State. And it looks like Temple's going to win that bet. But how about all four OWL programs needing head coaches right now, as Temple and Florida Atlantic fired their coaches this weekend? So they add Rice, Kennesaw State, Temple, and Florida Atlantic all firing their coaches. But let's get to Kennesaw State, because, you know, this was one of the most wild things I've seen in the market in quite some time, where we saw the market move over a touchdown in favor of Sam Houston State. Brian Bohannon, the coach of Kennesaw State, gets fired. They say he steps down. He goes on Twitter and is like, no, I was fired. Then a bunch of players hit the portal. I think 9 starters in all hit the portal. And I talked about this on the tailgate show on Saturday, where the first 3 teams that had fired their head coach this year had actually shown out well the following week. East Carolina covered against Temple 9.5 when they fired Mike Houston. Southern Miss covered against James Madison, and Rice won outright against Navy as a double digit dog. And I thought, yeah, it ain't happening this week. Kennesaw State, this is a disaster. Well, they forced overtime as a 21-point underdog, lost to Sam Houston State. But let's get to this week before we take a look at the other fired coach situations, because you wrote this game up. What jumps out to you about FIU Kennesaw State on Saturday?
So this one's the total. We saw this open for FIU -9, total 46.5. I believe Florida National still is laying about 9, if I remember correctly. The odds are in front of me. I'll pull this up in a second. But
yeah, 9.44.
So the total's down to 44. So what's interesting about this game is that total. So we saw at Circa this total got to about 43.5 after open 46.5. That's only a 3-point move. But by the way, that's a side note of kind of the column overall this week. We didn't see that many moves in terms of line moves of 3 or more points or total moves of 3 or more points. In fact, of the Circa openers, the ones that I wrote up, that was all of them but one. So the market's getting really tight. But the total here is what's at play. The Owls, one of the worst offenses in college football. That game that you mentioned against Sam Houston, it was the 7th time this season that a game went under for Kennesaw. And so they have been an under team. Again, going back to what we talked about with Iowa and Maryland, generally you see strong trends in season, which then dictates the market to kind of bet some of these teams down when these numbers open. But this is also going to be a slow-paced game, which is why I'm pretty fascinated to see. Like, I think this could be pretty ugly and pretty low scoring. Kennesaw State, 119th in offensive plays per game on the season in the country. At home, they run the 3rd fewest plays per game in the country at 58.3. Makes a little bit of sense. Nobody's there. It's very quiet. You can run. You can be meticulous with your offense. You can overcoach and communicate, do all those sort of things. And FIU is 122nd in plays per game as well. So these are two pretty slow-paced teams in terms of play calling and getting plays off. So you're probably going to get that. Panthers are a slight over team, but they're 120th in EPA per play. This looks like it's going to be a slow, low-scoring, glacial type of game that's going to get pretty ugly, and I think that makes a lot of sense. I also do think, Tim, that kind of makes Kennesaw State a little bit more plucky, right? When you're talking about catching 9 at the game that's about a total of 43.5, maybe it gets a little bit lower. I think there's a chance that we see Kennesaw State again maybe cover this number despite everything going on.
Yeah, and give them a ton of credit. It still makes no sense, but we're not the athletic director down there. But it leads into this, which is 5 more coaches were fired this week. And it's a incredibly small sample size, but I'm just having fun with it. As mentioned, we've had 4 teams fire their head coaches prior to this week. All 4 of those teams covered the spread, and covered the spread by a decent margin. East Carolina covered the spread by, it looks like, 12.5 points. Southern Miss covered the spread by 7. Rice covered the spread by 27, and then Kennesaw covered it by 15. So we do have a very interesting situation, as Florida Atlantic is catching 3 points against Charlotte. Tom Herman's fired at FAU in less than 2 years, and from all accounts is a complete and utter D-bag from everything that's been reported out of Boca. But then Charlotte fired Biff Poggi. So I guess we have to throw this game out, because both teams have fired head coaches. Temple goes out and fires Stan Drayton. They're catching 16.5 at UTSA. UMass fires Don Brown. So they're catching 6 touchdowns at Georgia. Georgia coming off of a massive win over Tennessee. And then Mike New got fired at Ball State, and they're catching 12 against Bowling Green. So we will see, JVT, if the old fired coach bump continues here. But unfortunately, it won't stay undefeated, because FAU and Charlotte both have fired their coaches and they're playing each other this week.
I mean, it's UMass, right? We got to take 40. We got to take those points with UMass against Georgia. I think that's totally the play.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to go with the Minutemen there?
Yeah. Well, I just
they almost won last week. They should have beat Liberty.
The problem is, as I always like to say, I don't think you're on TikTok like I am, but my favorite thing on TikTok is when your favorite team loses, right? So, you know, for example, we saw the Dodgers beat the Yankees. And so somebody goes on TikTok and fires up MLB The Show, and then they go and drop like 107 runs on the Los Angeles Dodgers, right? Like they win 107-0 on the easiest setting against the Dodgers to work out some frustration, right? Like the Yankees should have won. There's maybe a chance that that happens with Georgia. Like everything, we're just like, dude, this is getting frustrating. Like, yes, we did get a win over Tennessee, but let's flex our muscles here a little bit and work out all the issues. It feels very much like a Kirby Smart bloodletting type of game. So It's not the best spot.
No, I am not. I am not going to get on the UMass train. Last week, I should have taken the points with UMass against Liberty. That was quite the weird spot for Liberty to go up to old McGurk Stadium there in Amherst. But just worth noting, the old fired coach bump. We'll see if it continues. All right, two more thoughts here. I'll start with the Mountain West because you're a UNLV guy. UNLV plays on Friday this week against San Jose State. Right now, 7.5-point favorite. That's not the game I'm curious about. The game I'm curious about is the late night game on Saturday night. Fresno State is laying 3 against Colorado State, and I got a already ugh from JBT there. Look, Fresno State 2 weeks ago got run over by Air Force, and good job, Air Force, for getting us an easy win over Oregon State this past week. They're coming off a bye. They're 5-5. I don't know how much fight is left in Fresno State. They blew a lead to Hawaii a couple weeks ago, which was important to some, me, to get to that fourth win. And then Hawaii promptly got their ass kicked by Utah State last week. But look, Colorado State, I don't know the tiebreak situation. Maybe you do, but they're still undefeated in Mountain West play. I know I speak for many of us. We do not want to see you, Colorado State, BYU in the Mountain West Championship. Fresno State laying 3 here. Any thoughts on this one? I kind of like Fresno in this spot to get a win over Colorado State.
Just because I can't let it go, I'll make fun of you for a brief second and say, of course, we don't want to see Colorado State BYU in the Mountain West Championship game because BYU is in the Big 12. No,
by the way,
right.
Yeah. I tweeted it out. I called Dalton Kincaid Dalton Connect on Sunday. So, sometimes things get stuck in my head. Boise State.
So I think I believe the tiebreaker would go to, you know, similar to last year, not the computer modulator or whatever, but it has to do with like ranking and strength of schedule, and whatnot. Like UNLV would be over Colorado State if they both had one loss in conference play. So they just need Colorado State to lose. Having said that, I think on the surface, you would look at Fresno State and you mentioned like their recent form and go, I don't know about this. Like Fresno State not playing particularly well, but I will make the case, like you mentioned the Hawaii game, like, all right, you blew that 14 points in the fourth quarter for Hawaii. But, you know, Braden Shager and the Rainbow Warriors had been playing a little bit better. They'd want to, you know, they looked a little bit more competent, and Shager's a competent quarterback. This offense is all right. And then dare we say, Tim, like, I don't want to discount too much, but very quietly, and I think this tracks for an Air Force squad, right? A service academy that had to blow up its entire roster because that's just the limitations of what service academies deal with, is getting better as the season goes along. And you saw it, right? You mentioned Fresno State, you win that game, and then it's not a one-off because you go out there and beat the crap out of Oregon State. So maybe there's just a shot that the Air Force Falcons are getting a little bit better and that loss is not as bad as it looks on the surface. All that being said, it leads to this game against Colorado State. Matt and I have talked about this multiple times. I think this Colorado State team is fraudulent. I don't think that they're particularly good. I think when you look at everything from this team, to have the schedule that they have had up to this point, still come into this game ranked 85th in EPA per rush offensively, 70th in EPA per dropback. In terms of successful drive rate, they're 112th in the country still. This team is getting by on smoke and mirrors. And while I don't think that Fresno State is the most talented team in the world, I do think that they are perfectly capable of winning this game, especially when you look at some of their numbers defensively. They've been a top 50 team by EPA standards against the pass. They're 53rd in terms of EPA per dropback or thereabouts. I think that they can handle this squad. And from a success rate standpoint, too, again, float around 60th in the country. I think this team is going to be able to win this game. Now, like you said, I'm probably trying to speak this into existence. Not only am I a UNLV guy, but remember, I do have that 8-1 ticket on them to win the conference from before the season began. So I really much would like an opportunity to do something with that if they get to a Mountain West Championship game. But I do think that Fresno State, it's our best opportunity, ours, because I don't know if Utah State can pull it off. Maybe they can. But I do think that Fresno State's going to end this run for Colorado State.
Yeah, I laid three. I wanted to, I might still take a little cheap money line. I think the cheapest money line was minus 148, down to minus 142 at DraftKings. So yeah, if you're able to bet DraftKings, we unfortunately here in Nevada are not, but I know many of you live in states that DraftKings is available. I think minus 142, if you'd rather lay that, I think that is certainly worth a look there. And, you know, Adam talked about the bowl game tax that you have to play getting the bowl eligibility. Look, not every team is motivated to get to a bowl game. I do think there's going to be some motivation for Fresno State.
Sure.
Final home game under interim coach Tim Skipper. They play UCLA to wrap up the regular season. Not saying that's an automatic loss, but that's a tricky one there for Fresno State. And an opportunity, while their season has not gone the way that they probably hoped it would go, but an opportunity to play into the Mountain West Championship a little bit with a win over Colorado State. So yeah, I'm on Fresno State. I'll wrap with this because I know you watched the whole USC-Nebraska game. Also in that late night window, by the way, sneaky good late night slate this yep. weekend, 7:30 Pacific, Colorado State, Fresno State. That'll be a best bet of mine. USC, UCLA will be in that late night window. And Air Force, Nevada, do the Falcons win another game as a dog? Kind of flipping of what they did last year where they continue to win, lose those games as favorites. But I'm curious what you saw with USC going to Miava, because UCLA has been playing better. They did not win last week, of course, against Washington. And it goes back to my situation with the win total. And I got an email from Richard who was asking about what to do with the UCLA under 5.5 wins. They're 4-6. They're catching 4.5 against USC. This is a rivalry game. Initially, my eyes gravitated towards taking the points with UCLA. Maybe you wait to play it in game, but if you get a pregame position of +4.5, like we talked about with Iowa, I do think this is an opportunity to potentially middle the situation. But I'm curious your thoughts on this USC-UCLA game and what you saw from this USC offense going away from Miller Moss to Maiava.
I think we saw Jaden Maiava, man. You know, I think I sent you, I recorded the clip and sent it yeah. to you. His first interception of the day, returned for a touchdown. It wasn't a good throw. Like, it was a bad read. He overthrows his guy, puts it right in the spot where it shouldn't be, gets picked off and brought back to the house. A big reason why that if you got in the number early, you were able to cover that game if you were Nebraska, because their offense really didn't have anything. It just got fronted a touchdown. You think when you look at it too, through two other interceptable passes for a grand total of three turnover worthy plays. And that was the thing I brought up to you, right? When we were talking about that game earlier in the week, I don't think Jaden Maiava has fixed his issues as a quarterback. And for those who don't remember, go back and look at the last three games for Maiava for UNLV last year. A big reason why they went on the slide that they did was he was putting the ball everywhere. He's not as great of an athlete, I think, as people think he is. Like, yeah, he can get out of the pocket a little bit or whatever it is, but he's not adding some rushing element to your offense. And in fact, in one of his plays, I don't know how much you watch the game, he's running with the ball extended out like a hot potato, and he fumbles it. Like, he's not that great, I think, of a quarterback, and I think he's going to constantly put the ball in danger. And then you get this matchup against UCLA. For UCLA, if you look at some of the numbers, they can give up explosive plays. And if you get inside the red zone, you're probably going to have some success. But outside of that, 27th in expected points added per rush, 60th in expected points added per drop back, they have done a pretty decent job defensively throughout the entire year. I'm willing to go in and back UCLA in a continued fade of USC with Jaden Maiava as the quarterback. He's going to give other teams opportunities. We saw it against Nebraska. Again, it's a reason why you covered if you got in early, and I think that's going to be a big reason why UCLA has an opportunity to win this game outright.
Yeah, and this is the one, you know, I think I agree with you on the Iowa situation because it's two games. I need them to win both. I don't think this is the time to start to bite into that, that profit. I think this is the spot where, personally, I don't really trust this USC team. I think UCLA is playing much better, as we saw on a Friday night against Iowa when they went on the road to Nebraska. I give a lot of credit to Sean Foster and that squad. They're fighting. It's a rivalry game. They're at home. I'm not saying it's going to be a raucous crowd by any stretch of the imagination, but I trust in you on Maiava. And, I think this has the potential to be an outright UCLA win. I think the fact that it's a late night game does give you the opportunity, if you're like me with a win total under, to to live trade this game. But I think I'm going to have a pregame position on UCLA. I think plus 4.5 probably is the way I'm going to initially look, because, you know, I think they deserve credit, UCLA. I think they've turned the corner. And if they win this game, you know, I don't want to say it's definitely happening, but I think you would agree. If they win UCLA on Saturday, they're going to beat Fresno State to get to bowl eligibility. And they'll be a pretty significant favorite, I would think, in that finale against Fresno State in you know, the Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah, and if we're right, too, you would think maybe, you know, you like the situations, you're better with them than I do, but you would think getting that sixth win for Fresno State coming in and taking on UCLA, a little bit of a letdown after a big win over a Colorado State team that was on the verge of making it to a championship game.
He is Jonathan Von Tobel. Follow him on Twitter, at MeJVT. Read all of his content over at VSiN.com. Of course, we're running a special right now. Check out what we have to offer, $9.99 for the first 30 days, VSiN.com/subscribe. JVT and I will be back on Wednesday on VSiN Primetime, which airs from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. I'll be back tomorrow on this feed, Wednesdays with Wes, and then a Thursday show, of course, with Matt Humans. For Jonathan Von Tobel, I'm Tim Murray. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.